everyone. Welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where a group of talented local authors share their insights on the remarkable, imaginative, and nuanced world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode. So whether you're a fan, an aspiring author, or a reader interested in hearing more about this creative process, this show is for you. Episode 3, I sit down with one of Huron County's local authors, Tim Cumming, at the Huron County Museum. In our interview, Tim tells me all about his book, Planet, including where the idea for it came from, what it's about, and what the cast of characters are like. He also shares how 40 people in the community came together to perform his story in front of a live audience before the book was actually completed. Enjoy. Simple, but I guess I've got it as you've written a book that's Plan 8, but you've got maybe...
Yeah, basically, I wrote a novel, and it's a science fiction novel, but it's also a drama, it's also a book that's a romance. It's got a lot of things to it, so I don't think it's just for the science fiction fan. And it's called Planet, or Plan 8. And it's in two parts, or there's two parts to the book. And the first one is Exit, or X8, and Climate. Climate is the second part of the book. So it's basically a novel I wrote, and I really appreciate you making the time to speak to Huron County authors and to speak to me about the book, and also a play that... I wrote called The Tiger's Lion, which has a lot of history of Goderich and some of the people that were involved in the founding of Goderich. And so being here today at the Huron County Museum is a really fitting place to talk about that and the history of this area and some of the people that have helped not only with the book, but also helped with the play as well.
So yeah, I guess, how did you come, I guess the first book, you wrote that first, so how did that come about?
Yeah, so I finished the first part of the novel, which was Exit. I finished it first, and then I needed more time to finish the second part, Climate. And then once I had both parts finished, I published it as Planet, or rather I self-published it as Planet. So how did the novel come about? Many years ago, back in 2005, I was on an internet message board or discussion forum, whatever you want to call it, and somebody wrote something, and they said, "I think many people would prefer death to living underground forever." And that was really the germ. That's what got me thinking about where we're headed as a planet, with changes to our climate, with a seeming inability to make structural changes to what we do that could prevent or lessen the impact of anthropogenic changes to our climate. And so I basically asked myself, you know, would I live underground, or is that going to be our only option? Is it an option? Would people even do that? Mm-hmm. And that got me thinking. That's where the story came. And it took a lot of years to write it. So from that first idea back in 2005, it was probably another 6 or 7 years before the book was even partly done. One of the things we did, which was really cool and really neat for me, was we did a reading of the novel even before it was done, which is kind of unconventional and probably not maybe a great idea, but it was really encouraging to me because the former Candlelight restaurant and tavern that used to be here in Goderich, I said to the owner, you know, would I be able to come in sometime and do a reading of my book. He said, that would be fine. And so I started asking local musicians, local actors, local writers, would you be part of this, you know, essentially performance of the novel? And I also asked family who had some talent in the area as well. And we had about 40 people out. And it was really gratifying to have the support of the local artistic community that was willing to come out. Nobody got paid. Wonderful musicians that did original music to accompany. Some of my family members that have acting experience, local actors, local writers, and it became a bit of a performance. And what struck me was that, you know, people were talking about the story at the end of that event, and I thought, yeah, there really is a story here. And so then it's a matter of publishing. And in my case, I didn't go the route of looking for an agent, trying to see if one of the big publishing houses would publish it. I think just because it would take, you know, a whole lot more work and a whole lot more years to make this happen. And I wanted to get the story out there. I wanted to finish the book. And I wanted to have the personal satisfaction of holding that book in my hands and saying, I did it. So nobody got rich off of this, but it's still a bucket list of things. So when I finally got it done, then one of the things that was really interesting and positive was young people seemed to really like it. And that wasn't necessarily an audience I was thinking of. It's a long, dense novel. And yet, I think that it appealed to them that there were some fairly young characters. There was a story that had a message that was about something important. One of the big questions, perhaps the big question and the big challenge of our lifetime and for generations to come. And so seeing young people enjoy it was really fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Glad to have it that way.
Well, for sure.
Yeah. Let's see what I got here for other questions I can ask you.
And while you're looking for questions, I want to thank you, Hamilton, and the County of Huron, Huron County Library, for the initiative you have of promoting Huron County authors, but also professional development, getting them together. You know, I can't pretend to be an author per se. I you know, no publishing houses come knocking at my door. But what's really been interesting about this whole process that you've initiated to get writers talking to each other and working together is I've found out how many successful authors we have, some of whom are self-published, but many who have got agents, who have got big publishing houses supporting them, who have written several books. And that's really exciting as a resident of Huron County to know that we have so many people. I knew some of the authors we had. I knew we had quite a few. But I've really learned just how many we do have.
Right, that's been a nice benefit, is everybody sees how many others have found success from this area.
Yeah, and it's in some ways it's kind of daunting to be sitting at the same table with people who've accomplished much more in the writing field than what I have. Mm-hmm. But it's also challenging, it's inspiring, it's all those things. So I thank you and the Huron County Library for making it possible. Also, I want to thank the library. They got several copies of my novel, and so that's really nice because when I'm, you know, promoting it to people, I want people to read the story. Sure, I love if somebody wants to buy the book, wonderful to have a copy of their own. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to have a couple of dollars in your pocket. But more importantly, I want the story out there. And by having it in the library system, people can access it and read it. And I can tell people, hey, just read the story. You can go online and read some excerpts at climatechangenovel.com or colburnpublishers.com. You could buy the ebook fairly inexpensively, or you can just go to your library and get it at no cost with your library card. And to give people that option is really important. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad we have it in the library. Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. awesome. I guess one thing I did want to ask is what year was it released?
You know, that is an excellent question. I'm looking at 2018. So okay. If you think of me seeing that post in 2005, mm-hmm. And you know, self-published in 2018. So that's a lot of years to write it and then to get it formatted for self-publication, and then the marketing and promotion. And self-publishing is a great option for a lot of people like myself to make it happen. So, you know, you've got that idea, you want to get it out there, you can make it happen. But there are some challenges to that, because if you're trying to write it and get that finished, but then you have to do all the formatting and making it look professional, and then marketing and getting it out there. And so I probably shortchanged the writing and shortchanged the marketing by trying to do everything. That's some of the downsides. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, it moved it forward, because if it took me till 2018 to get this published, if I had tried to get an agent and get it published by somebody else, it might have been years more, if right. at all, right? So
right.
Anyway, yeah.
So I guess one question is, what do you have an explanation why it took so long as it did? Is you're just a busy person, or you're a slow writer, or yeah?
I didn't put the number of hours into it that would have made it possible to write it in a shorter time frame. Mm-hmm. It's really inspiring to see these other Huron County writers that you've had in this group, and to see how many books they can write in a short period of time. And I can't imagine it. Now, my book turned out to be very long. I originally conceived in my mind that it might, you know, might be 200 or 300 pages. And, you know, it's now 700 or 800 pages. So it was a lot longer than what I first envisioned. So part of it's the length, part of it's, you know, I was trying to write and balance full-time work with doing writing. Sometimes I would write on the weekend at the Legion, or at the local tavern, or over my lunch hour at work, and sometimes at night. But sometimes when I got home, I didn't spend as much time at the desk as at the computer as I should have.
Yeah.
So that's some of the reasons it took that long. And also, I learned through the process that writing a novel is really tough, because there's a lot to structuring the story and getting it to work. And so, I mean, I could probably spend another 10 years improving it too.
Right, probably, yeah. Well, and speaking of that, I was going to ask you about the story. Yeah. So what, if somebody wanted to know what the story was about, how would you explain it to them or describe it to them?
Yeah, I guess I would describe the book Planet as a dystopian, post-apocalyptic love triangle, romance, action, science fiction, essay. I don't know what you would call it. You know, it's a story about a young couple. It's also a story about a career criminal who lives in this underground world and is not abiding by all the laws of the society. But he ends up being a key figure because of his love for this young woman, Renaissance, or Renee, that he becomes a pivotal figure, making it possible for her to be in this underground society, but to consider, are there still people, is there still civilization on the surface of planet Earth, on the face of planet Earth? And so a big portion of the book, the whole second part, climate, is this young couple and this career criminal trying to break the most forbidden rule of this underground civilization and trying to get back to the face of the earth, because there are still people on Earth. But, you know, really, it's, I hope it's an entertaining story. I mean, it's a good portion of the book is them breaking into this corporate compound that's almost like a town of its own, and then next part of the book is them trying to break out of this civilization. So it's kind of an adventure, but hopefully, as people are getting to know these characters, as people are following the story, I would hope they would also start thinking a question about where we're headed. Where are we going as planet Earth, and can we do things differently, and what are we willing to accept, and at what point are we willing to make dramatic changes to prevent the kind of futuristic world that I have created in the book. In the book, I read a lot of books, and some of them I enjoy, but part of me says, oh, that couldn't happen. And I suspend disbelief because the author asks me to suspend disbelief. But I think with this story, I believe that there's nothing in here that isn't more than plausible. In fact, you know, that everything that happens, I think, could very well be a possible future that we're headed, and even within the world that I've created, this underground world 300 years in the future, nothing happens in the book where the reader should go, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. Right. There's no way they could do that. There's no way that could happen in that time frame. I could be wrong, but no one has come back to me and said, I didn't buy it. It just couldn't happen. No, I think everything in here could happen. I hope it doesn't. I hope we as a society make some changes. But if past performance is the best indicator of future progress, then that's not encouraging.
No, it's not. Not at all. But yeah, so I guess I was going to ask about genre. It's tough to place yours in a specific genre, isn't it?
Yeah, it is science fiction because it has to do with science and climate, and it takes place 300 years in the future. So in that sense, it's science fiction. But once you acknowledge that there's that setting, and also technology and the stampede of technology and the rapidity of changes, the quick pace of change in technology, wasn't something that interested me, and it's not something I wanted to deal with in the book. But as I started thinking about, okay, this has to take place 300 years in the future, well, even what the technology is today with artificial intelligence, or what our society is going to look like in 5 years or 10 years or 25 years. I mean, in 300 years, I mean, we as human beings may be totally different. Technology would be totally different. So I had to address technology, and I do to an extent. And what I did was I had this underground government basically trying to prevent the pace of technological growth, but it can't be stopped, and technology continues to grow. So you asked Hamilton, you know, what genre is this, how do you describe its genre? I mean, it is science fiction, but it's also an adventure novel, but it's also a drama, it's also a romance. It's a love triangle novel. But it's a love triangle in the sense that the main character, it's unrequited love. He loves this woman, but he's not going to see that love requited. He's not going to see that love come
back. She doesn't love him back.
She does not love him back. That's what I'm trying to say in much better, clearer words than.
So, speaking of characters, I had a question about characters. Which of the characters do you relate to the most, and why?
Certainly. I think the main character, Andrew Hardy, I see a lot of myself in him, or I picture him almost like myself. Now, obviously, he's a career criminal. I'm not a career criminal. I'd like to make that very clear.
That's good. You
know, for our listeners.
Yeah.
But just in terms of temperament and character and how he sees himself and that, I found it easy to put a lot of that in there. I really admire the Renaissance Pioneer character. She's a really strong character. But I really admire those male authors who can really get themselves thinking like their women characters, their female characters. And I don't know if I did an amazing job in that. I find I tend to be male-centric, and I don't know where that comes from, but it's just a weakness or deficiency that I think of male characters. Maybe it's because as a child I used to do comic books, and it was the typical, big giant men with big biceps. And
right.
So I tried hard to bring in some really strong women characters. And so there's one, Detective Ruth Cannon, Ruth Roxy Cannon, and I quite like her, and she's got some characteristics just that I like, and some characteristics that are from women I've met, and Renaissance or Renee. I think she's a good character. Roxy's probably the most colorful and endearing character. Sometimes when you're writing, some of the smaller characters take a life of their own. I wrote a play called The Tiger's Lion, which the Goddard's Little Theater, the Historic Livery, did. And in it, I had a character called the Jailer. And he is the jailer for Goddard's co-founder John Galt, who was a Scottish novelist and also the land developer that developed Goddard and Guelph. Basically, he had ended up in later life in debtor's prison, and he'd started out with a successful idea that in the long term was a hugely successful idea. But in his own lifetime, he went from fame to essentially ruin. So the way I had that play structured, I needed a character in debtor's prison that's the jailer or the jail warden who has him in jail. And I thought it would be interesting if this warden, this jailer, had read John Galt's books. And one of my writer friends read a draft of the play, and he said, yeah, I don't know if I buy this fellow as a literate fellow that's read Sir Walter Scott and read John Galt. But I still really liked it, and we ended up sticking with it. Well, that jailer character became this really funny, endearing character, and he started off as a bit of a device to serve the story, but he ended up really having a life of his own, both in the play and on stage. So going back to the novel, you had a good question about which character I relate to most, and hopefully there's a little bit of me, good and bad, in each of the characters, but that main character, Andrew Hardy, he's probably the one I identify with the most.
Well, and now that you were mentioning the Tiger's Lion, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a play, but I see you've got it in book format. Like, can people purchase that book? I don't know if we have them at the library.
I'm not sure. You can double check if it's at the library. Ask for it at the library, and if they don't have it, either they can get one from me or I can give one to them. It is available for purchase. Both my books are available at lulu.com or through my website, colbornpublishers.com. And so I did self-publish the play to have it in written form, and I did that in 2020. And so that was really exciting. Here again, it wasn't a big commercial success. I didn't sell a lot of copies, but I think it looks quite professional. I had a professional designer help me with the design. There's a professional photographer friend took the picture in the back, and I think the layout of it is professional looking. But it was, here again, vanity in a sense. It was a story I wanted to share, and I also enjoy, you know, seeing my name on something and seeing that I've completed something like that. But the other thing was, that play, The Tiger's Lion, was something I can't take credit for myself, because it would not have happened if it wasn't for a lot of people in this Huron County community. And I remember going to a friend and having this idea for a Goderich anniversary, you know, one person reading of some things I was writing about John Galt. And they said, well, you should talk to local playwright Rob Bundy. And so I talked to Rob, who's a friend, and Rob said, you should really talk to Duncan McGregor. And it was Duncan McGregor that really made this possible, because he's an incredible dramaturge, working with young playwrights and taking what is not perfectly formed into something that works on stage. And so I had, you know, many good ideas and many good scenes and, you know, many dozens of pages, if not hundreds of pages. And it was Duncan that was able to work with me to get it into a story that worked. And that involved a lot of deletion, where there were things that were missing. That had to be changed. He asked about the villain, who is the famous character from Canadian history, Bishop John Strawn, Archdeacon Strawn. And Duncan asked me, well, what's his character? I said, well, he's just a bad guy. he's a two-dimensional villain. And Duncan says, I don't do two-dimensional villains. And so I had to really go back and do some more research and rethink, who was this guy? Because we grew up in school learning about Strawn and learning about the family compact, and, you know, they were, you know, an insidious, power-hungry group, etc. But then you find out that Strawn was actually a bit of a hero in the War of 1812, and you find out, you know, he was a really strong character, and as you make that so-called villain or adversary a stronger, richer, more deeply drawn character, then that actually serves the whole story. So you now have, in my story, basically, John Galt pitted against Strawn, and Strawn isn't a straw man. He isn't a weak character, you know, crudely drawn. He's a rich, interesting human being with good and bad, and it just makes the whole story better. So that happened. And I went off to teacher's college, and I had almost finished the play, but I met Duncan in Toronto a few times as we finished off the script. But then I came back to Goderich in 2003. And by that time, the Little Theater had taken the play, and the late, great Greg Reynolds, who did the set, and his set crew, they did this amazing stage that took a very almost magical realism kind of setting, if you will, this fantastic setting. They created this amazing set, and I remember when the play was about to be performed, and I'm there and I'm excited to see it, but then I get really scared. Because the play is a story about these young kids that go to Tiger Dunlop's tomb, and they use some, you know, almost, well, witchcraft to bring back Tiger Dunlop, and then they end up in this ethereal world where it's, you know, the great authors of history, like Susan Ferrier and Lord Byron and Sir Walter Scott and Galt. And then they have this big trial with this sort of ghost judge that is judging the greatness or lack of greatness of John Galt. And so it's a wild and fantastic story. And I started thinking, what if this doesn't work? What if people say, what in tarnation is this, right? And so sitting in the background, all of a sudden I hear the music, and it's Dave Armour's singing and the playing of the local musicians like Mike Crocker. And then there's the stage built by Greg Reynolds and his crew, and all the local actors who did such a great job, and Duncan's great directing. And then people are laughing in the right places and crying in the right places. And I'm like, yeah, this works. But you don't know. And here again, when I wrote the novel, I didn't know if people would react to the story. And when we did that that public reading at the Candlelight, and some people, including some senior citizens, were talking to me afterwards and were really affected by the story and the characters. And I thought, okay, yeah, this works. So hopefully some people listening to this podcast today will consider going to their library, getting a copy of the book or the play, and reading it, and hopefully they like the story. I like the story.
Sounds like, yeah, they're both very interesting, and yeah, obviously people have reacted well that have heard, or, you know, heard the reading or heard, saw the play, right? So I think there's interest out there. Can be interest out, yeah, there, for sure. So another question is, how did you come up with the title for your book?
Well, the title was actually a lot to do with my wife, Judith, who is quite a literary person. She reads quite a bit, and she had this idea of planet with the plan 8 and exit with the X8 and climate with the climate 8. And it just kind of worked out that way, and I thought it was kind of neat. It's almost like a license plate sticker. If you read a license plate and you put the letters together and it makes a word, that's kind of what this is. Now, I don't know that everybody has got it necessarily, so I may at some point in the future republish it as just planet in two parts, exit and climate, without the eight that appears in all three books. But it just, you know, you try something, and some things resonate with people, and some don't resonate as much. But it does make it different. One thing about, you know, the process of publishing, the books go under Tim B. Cumming, and I hope it doesn't sound pretentious to have the B in there. The only reason the B's in there is there is a writer called Tim Cumming, and so this is just to distinguish me from that. And I guess that's one of the questions you have is, you know, do you use a pseudonym, or, you know, have a different name? And I thought of, you know, maybe being Tim Bruce or Tim Cole or something like that. But I finally just decided to throw an initial in there just to distinguish myself from the professional writer who I believe is a poet. I think there's a poet out there, maybe from Europe, I can't remember, but anyway, that's why I did that. Gotcha. So yeah, that's why I came up with those names, and you know, people responding to the podcast can say, yeah, I like it, really cool idea, or I don't like it, and I'd love to get the feedback on you know, at some point in the future, I would love to make it possible to have this as an audiobook. I know I've had a lot of people asking, you know, will you do it as an audiobook? I speak a little bit of Spanish. I'd love to translate it into Spanish for some of my friends and acquaintances who speak Spanish. Those are all possibilities in the future, but it all takes time and money, and so we'll see how much initiative I have to make those things happen. But in the meantime, it's the book is in my hands and in the hands of others, and that's super exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So you have more than, in the book, you've got, I guess, three main characters?
Yeah.
Would you call those three the main three main characters?
Yeah, so the three main characters are the young couple, and the young fellow's name is Noah, and Noah and Renaissance are the young couple, and then Andrew or Andy Hardy, he's the career criminal, and they're the three main characters. But there are some other characters in there that I think the reader would be interested in as well. There's a detective called the Hound Dog, and here again, stories sometimes go off on their own, and this Hound Dog character, there's a whole series with him and his wife and the breakdown of their marriage, and that's something that just, you know, the characters told that story themselves. It, you know, wasn't something that needed to move the story forward, but I think it's powerful in terms of creating this character. And so you have this detective, and then Ruth, Roxy Cannon, another detective, and they end up working together. And so there's the relationship they have, but there's also the relationship of the detective and the criminal, the Hound Dog and Hardy, and them and the relationship they have. And that is really interesting in terms of the story and about their values and how we get to where we are. And in many ways, they're similar. In many ways, they're quite different. And seeing them play off of each other, in a sense, they're an antagonist and protagonist, but in another sense, they're both protagonists, just opposite sides of the coin.
Mm, gotcha. And I was going to ask, if you met, let's say you met your main characters, do you think you'd get along with them?
If I met the main characters, I don't think I would enjoy the Hound Dog. I liked him when I created him, and I think people reading the book will like him, but he's not somebody that I would want to hang out with. He's a little too severe, a little too dour. Detective Ruth Cannon, Roxy Cannon, she's definitely a character I would like to hang out with. I could see going out for a beer with her or some other kind of drink, and you know, she would make you laugh, and you know, she'd slap you on your back and almost knock you over and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I would like her. Renaissance, I would like, but I probably wouldn't develop you know, a close relationship with her. Noah Frontier, he's kind of a working class chip on his shoulder kind of a fellow, and I would definitely be interested in meeting him, but it would be hard to get to know him because he's a kind of the strong silent type in many ways, and he carries a lot of pain inside and that type of thing. So I guess something you can enjoy as a reader is the, you know, omniscient narrator in this, and that's kind of the model I have in this is, I'll tell you about the narrator. The narrator is kind of an interesting fellow himself. He's called the Weatherman, and it's all written from the point of view of this fellow, all these, you know, 300 years in the future, and he's a student of weather and climate, and so he's got a bit of his personality, and he's quite an enjoyable character. As he tells the story, almost like he's discovered this archives of what happened to humankind, and so both the beginning and the end of the book and at parts in between, you really get to enjoy the character of this so-called weatherman. But as that omniscient narrator that he is, he can look deeper into these characters and tell you who they are. And people on the street that you might not get to really know, or you only get to see that public mask or that public face. And in a book, you can really get to know them a lot deeper. And I think it's been an interesting process writing the novel, because it makes me think about what makes each of these characters tick. And I know the great writers, you know, take it, you know, much more deeper than I do. I mean, I might be pulling back two or three layers of the onion. You know, the great writers probably pull back, you know, 20 layers of the onion, right?
Mm-hmm. But
so, yeah, I would like to meet some of these characters in person. And, you know, I like most of them. There's other ones that... there's the fellow that's the leader of this sort of underground corporate mega company that, you know, almost is a state unto itself, and he's a nasty piece of work, and I wouldn't like to meet him. Quite dislike him, but here again, I don't want him to be a straw man and somebody who isn't well developed. And so I do try to get to know him in the book and give him some depth and give the backstory, so to speak, of how he was when he was a child and what made him the way he is. And so I have some scenes that I think show and not tell how he becomes who he is. Like, you know, they always say, you know, if you're writing well, you should show, not tell. Mm-hmm. And as much as possible, I've tried to learn how to do that. And I think I've done that with this man who's, like, they call him the pastor. And the pastor is the head of this company that controls so much. And so I think, you know, you're going to meet a lot of characters in this book, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I enjoyed getting to meet them myself through the writing process.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Tim as much as I did. If you'd like to learn more about him or to purchase one of his books, you can visit either ColburnPublishers.com, that's ColburnPublishers.com, or you can visit ClimateChangeNovel.com. As he mentioned, you can also borrow his book Plan 8 or The Tiger's Lion from the library. Visit HuronCountyLibrary.ca to place a hold today. Stay tuned for our next episode that we'll release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.